straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. Episode 150, Duck. We are still here 150 episodes later.
How did that happen?
I don't know. Maybe it's one of those things, like kind of like the mob,
yeah,
where business is just quiet and things are going slowly and under the radar.
Just can't get rid of us.
And you can't get rid of us. We're here to collect today for another 150 episodes after this. Well, if you hadn't noticed, my name's Cedric Golden, and he is Kirk Bowles, a.k.a. The Duck. Kirk, the Texas Longhorns gave LSU all they can handle, but at the end of the day, they lost, and they are now 1-1.
They did lose. They played competitively. They played LSU pretty much on even terms on a national stage where the lights were the brightest. And to play such a great shootout of a game, you know, it dispelled some notions that, yeah, the Big 12 teams don't play any defense. Well, you could argue the SEC team didn't play any defense that night either, because they gave up a galore of points galore, if you will. And Texas showed that they can be competitive with another top five team, and now they've got to put that to use and see if they can get by Rice.
You've come a long way, baby Longhorns, and we're gonna preview the Rice game in our next segment. But first, Kirk, you had a really nice conversation with another famous Kirk, a lot younger, a lot better looking, and a lot more famous.
Tons more famous, tons richer, tons better looking, and it was a pleasure to visit with Kirk Herbstreit.
Here's Kirk Herbstreit with the Duck on Second Thought.
We're glad to have Kirk Herbstreit, the voice of college football, with us. And Kirk, can you tell us something about the All-State promotion that you and the people at ESPN are working with?
Yeah, All-State and I have been together for a number of years, and the last few years we've kind of come up with the mayhem moment, and college football is really about how unpredictable it can be, and there's mayhem moments every single week. And so on Tuesday with Twitter, I'll send out my prediction for the week, the mayhem moment, where I think there might not just be an upset, but
right.
It could be a close call like what we had last week with Michigan and Army, or maybe an individual performance, something that just kind of could potentially catch your eye. So I'll do that on Tuesday. And Saturday night during our broadcast on ABC, usually in the second half, I'll look back the whole weekend and try to recognize what I thought was the mayhem moment of the week, whether it's, you know, Colorado coming back to beat Nebraska or something of that magnitude. So we'll do that every single week, and just kind of trying to have fun celebrating how unpredictable the sport can be and how many moments every single week there are that you didn't quite see coming. So, yeah, have a lot of fun with it, both predicting on Tuesday and then reacting on Saturday night.
Have you started already, or will this week be the first week?
Yeah, we've done a few this week. Or first 2 weeks, we've done it. We didn't do anything for week zero, but we've done it the first couple weeks, and we'll continue throughout the rest of the year. Our reaction last week was to Army's close call as kind of the mayhem moment. They really outplayed Michigan for much of that game and got it into OT and ended up coming up a little bit short. But that was definitely one of those scores, no matter where you were when you heard the score, it was one of those, what's going on? Do you want to try to get to your TV to watch it to see what was happening? So that's exactly kind of what we're trying to create is what's the story of that Saturday.
Excellent. Well, you were here with game day, then later that night did the Texas LSU game. Your general thoughts of how that game played out and the whole atmosphere at DKR, Kirk?
Well, first of all, the atmosphere is incredible. I can't imagine in a couple of years when they finish that end zone project what it'll look like. But We've not been there for a number of years,
right?
And to see the difference in a game day atmosphere is, I'm sure you've witnessed it yourself and been astonished with what they've done in a couple of years. But as an outsider that doesn't get there very often, I can just give you a thumbs up for what they've created there. And like I said, in 2 years when that gets closed in, it'll become an intimidating atmosphere, which I don't know if we could have said before, even in the glory years, you know.
Exactly.
That was a lot of fun to see two quarterbacks in the middle of the ring just going toe to toe, just throwing haymakers. I mean, Texas wouldn't go away. To their credit, they kept fighting back, dug themselves a hole there in the first half, and next thing you know, they're right there, and we got a game that's going back and forth, and then you got to give LSU credit because sure. They're on the road in that environment and running a new offense, and their quarterback Joe Burrow, I felt like as the game got tighter, he seemed to play better and with more confidence, and I think he sent a message to the nation that this offense from LSU is to be taken seriously, and he is to be taken seriously as a quarterback. And in fact, in a year where we had a ton of veteran quarterbacks coming back this year, he's not really a name very many people talked about. And now after 2 weeks of football, I think there's probably a lot of people going to be talking about Joe and like I said, this new offense that they're running, because it's very, very, very different from the LSU offense of the past.
Well, even when they're trying to protect the lead, they're still throwing the ball downfield. I mean, this is LSU. I mean, come on.
I even said during the broadcast, I'm saying, especially that third down, I'm thinking, oh, Texas down to one timeout. You got a 6-point lead. They'll probably run the ball here and try to make Texas use that last timeout.
Right.
Instead, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
Steps up in the pocket, pressure all around him, and throws an absolute perfect strike. To Justin Jefferson, who obviously made a play after the catch, but man, that was something else to see that. And like, I kept looking at those uniforms, saying, "This is the same offense that had Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, and Jeremy Hill on the same team, and would have never done that."
No.
And now here they are, taking chances and living on the edge.
I wonder a little bit, Kirk, if maybe we're sleeping a little bit on, you know, your old team, Ohio State and LSU, and I wonder if we put different jerseys on Alabama and Clemson, could LSU and Ohio State maybe be playing the best football of anybody in the country right now?
I think, and let's reserve judgment on Oklahoma because of who they played,
sure.
But they've looked pretty good with Jalen Hurts coming in and the way they're operating on offense, and they've got this new defense. But, of course, time will tell. In a few weeks when they play better competition, they get in the conference. They're playing with a chip on their shoulder. I think they got tired of hearing about all the talk about Michigan and how's Ohio State going to be without Urban Meyer? How's Ohio State going to be without Dwayne Haskins? I know from being around their team a little bit that they took exception to that. And
right.
They clearly are playing with a chip. And then you're right. We just have been trained to just think, okay, Alabama's going to come out of the SEC West. We know that. And, you know, LSU might give them a little bit of a challenge, but the game's in Tuscaloosa, so they'll have no problem there. And now, after 2 weeks and really seeing this offense with Joe Burrow, I'm with you. Right now, if that game were played, that would be a game I would recommend if you're a college football fan. You either try to get to that stadium or you watch it on TV, because that's going to be a heck of a matchup between obviously Tua, but Joe Burrow in this offense. I just hope both teams can stay healthy by the time they get to each other, because that would be a heck of a matchup.
You know, I love the fact that Joe Burrow's doing it on the field, too. One of my favorite Heisman guys was Barry Sanders, yet Oklahoma State came in with no billing and won it on the field. And Joe certainly thrust his name into that conversation, I would think, wouldn't you?
Wow, I didn't, number one, I didn't realize that Barry Sanders didn't have a lot of hype.
No,
that year.
Nothing.
Really?
He came out of nowhere. It was just stunning.
Wow,
and that's why I love it. He won it without the hype, you know.
He had replaced Thurman Thomas. Is that
right?
They thought, okay, Thurman Thomas is gone. Who's going to be their next running back?
Exactly.
Was it that kind of thing?
And he tore it up in September, but he just tore it up all year, too. And I don't know. Would you put Sam and Joe in the Heisman mix, or how much is Sam hurt by the fact they didn't win that game, even though he's got eight TDs and no interceptions? in two games?
I was talking to some folks earlier this morning that said, you know, they're out of Oklahoma, so maybe that's why, but they're asking if Texas is out of the picture for now, you know, as far as the playoff and all that. They said, you want to change your prediction, because I had predicted Texas at the beginning of the year to get into the playoff. And I said, wait a second. I said, what did Texas do to hurt their image on a national level by the way they played against a really good team in OSU?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they may have dropped a spot or two in the AP poll, but, you know, this whole Texas is back or they're not back, I don't think they did anything to hurt themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't win the game.
Sure.
But the beauty of playing LSU on national TV on that big a stage is the chance to have a competitive game. And as opposed to playing, I don't know, Sam Houston State or whoever you're going to play,
right?
You go into a game like that on that stage, and to me, Sam Ellinger helps his cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Texas brand that they're desperately trying to build back up. How do I watch that game and say, Texas, forget about
same old Texas, right?
Yeah. And they battled their tails off. And,
right.
And I, in fact, people kind of in the sport, every one of them that I talk to, kind of impressed by what they saw from Texas and from Sam. So, yeah, we'll see where they go from here. As you know, from covering them.
Sure.
I think they have Rice this week.
Right.
Oklahoma State, who I think will be a good challenge for their defense. And then West Virginia, and then they get ready for the big one with Oklahoma. I will say this, walking out of there, as much as Todd Orlando loves to be aggressive and loves to try to create negative plays by coming up with sacks and things of that nature, I think they're going to have to try to shore up themselves in the back end. I think Jalen Green's going to be a superstar down the road, but I think LSU was kind of they were winning those battles with Boyce on the outside on one side and Green on the other. In fact, I think they made a move, brought in Anthony Cook. They were trying to find some answers. But that's the one area that I walked out of there thinking, if they got to get better at corner, the way they play defense, their style,
right,
when they play these teams in the Big 12 that love to just air it out. And Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, I mean, you name it,
sure,
those corners are going to get challenged every week. And I don't think Texas wants to be one of these teams that has to outscore people. They're too athletic on defense. But they've got to figure out what they're going to do with corner in order for them to ultimately get to where their goals are of trying to beat Oklahoma and win the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, I think he's caught a little bit, Kirk, and he doesn't have that premier pass rusher on the edge, and he can't get pressure from the defensive line, so he takes chances, and I can't think that's the gamble a little bit. But you're exactly right. Did you see a Texas team that was as physical is LSU, because you know how physical SEC teams are?
Absolutely. I thought they were somewhat of a mirror looking at it, one another. They both run what I almost really call a 3-3-5, where they play three down linemen, and you know, sometimes you have three linebackers in, and sometimes there's five DBs, sometimes there's six, sometimes there's seven. I mean, the whole goal of these defenses is trying to play in space and trying to defend some version of a spread attack. And so the more speed they can get on the field, the better. And so that's why I think you could see the linebackers, when you talk about having, well, they don't have a dominant pass rusher. You know, when I think about a pass rusher, I think of their linebackers being turned loose on blitzes and trying to get in there. But overall, absolutely. I don't think you watch that game and you think, boy, Texas needs to get more physical. I think you watch that game and you think, boy, those two quarterbacks are outstanding. Joe Burrow's got, like, he's got a new toy to play with the way he's throwing things around, and he was in such command of things all night. So, no, I think if anything, you walk out of there thinking, and I think because of the youth, there's only one way for this defense to go, which is up. But, you know, the way he's recruiting, I think you can see it. I think they look faster to me on defense.
Mm-hmm.
They look definitely more physical. And I'd be interested to see how they handle a disappointing loss, to see where they go this week. You know, it's obviously a team that they should handle and write.
Sure.
Then the next week against Oklahoma State, I think we'll really see who Texas is. And if they are able to win that game, then they go into a bye, I think you could see this team being back to gaining that swagger back and getting ready to really heat things up in conference play.
Right. And a couple things, then I'll let you go, Kirk. Mack Brown, 2-0 in North Carolina. He beats Will Muschamp, his former D.C. Then he beats Manny Diaz at Miami, another D.C. I guess he's looking for former defensive coaches. I suggested he should play Brian Harsin, Boise State, his former O.C. So what do you think of what Mack's doing so far?
How about that? I mean, it's incredible. I mean, we've had a lot of fun with him. You know, being on ABC
right.
With us the last few years and being around him quite a bit at different functions. Of course, known him for years as a coach.
Sure.
And I think I think if you asked him, he would tell you he really enjoyed doing TV. But I think all coaches, they have that itch. And if the right opportunity comes across their face, that they're going to jump on it. And I think really maybe from what he said, going back to Chapel Hill was probably the only place he would go.
Right.
But what he inherits is a team that was 2-9 last year and 3-9
it's amazing.
The year before that. And so think about it, they've won 5 games in the last 2 years. So the culture there obviously needed to be changed. And, you know, I think he comes in and right away is able to establish a certain amount of respect because of who he's been as a coach, not only his time in Texas, but also, of course, his time there in North Carolina. And for them to get out of the gate with a couple wins against South Carolina and Miami, this is a very, very different team. And by the way, I should mention, Larry Fedora left the team with some talent. I mean, he's playing a true freshman quarterback, but around that young quarterback, he's got some skill that he's working with. And, you know, it's not as if he's outmanned every game he's going into. So he's got some talent to work with. And now all of a sudden he's got a confident football team, and we'll see where they go from here. By the way, they do have Clemson coming up at home at the end of the month. And if they're able to win these next few, be interesting to see the hype for that game with Mack going up against Dabo Swinney in September, late September.
That would be fun. Maybe game day shows up. Who knows? The only thing, I know he needs to work with Sam Howell, his freshman quarterback, is, you know, and he's going to have to work on his dancing a little bit, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I give him credit for trying, though.
Oh, yeah.
He gave the players what they wanted. So
exactly.
I don't know if everybody would have done that. But
yeah.
At least he participated and had some fun.
And last thing before I let you go, Kirk, any surprises that you've seen, you know, Army, Michigan not being that strong right out of the – California knocking off Washington after Oregon lost to Auburn, Pac-12 kind of same problems. Just generally in college football, anything jumps out at you after just 2 weeks?
I would say the way the Auburn-Oregon game ended with a true freshman making a play like that on that big of a stage with Bo Nix throwing that touchdown pass
right.
when Auburn really all they needed was a field goal to win it, but the aggressive nature – I think Joe Burrow and the way he played and in that environment in a close game, and like you said, I mean, instead of just doing what page 14 in the coaching play calling book says, just work the clock and make them use timeouts, but being aggressive, that aggressive nature was incredible to see in person. So that one stands out. And then if I picked one that was a little bit off the wall, I might say Mike Locksley leaving Alabama and going to Maryland and the job that he's done in at least the first couple of weeks, that also to me kind of stands out. You know, he's got a quarterback, by the way, Josh Jackson, who came over from Virginia Tech, the transfer portal himself. But they're in the Big Ten East where the water's pretty deep with Ohio State and Michigan State and Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Now you throw Maryland and the way they're scoring. That Big Ten East is really setting itself up for a heck of a year as far as the competition top to bottom. So I think Maryland's success, Cal with Justin Wilcox, not just beating Washington, but that's the second year in a row. They're known for their defense. They got one of the top defenses in the country, not only the Pac-12, but their offense generated enough there to be able to go on the road and win after that long weather delay. So keep an eye on Cal out west. They might be a little bit of a surprise, not just a one upset this weekend. They kind of have some veterans on that team, so they could be a team worth keeping an eye on.
And anything on the Aggies, you know, they kind of stubbed their toe at Clemson, got a late touchdown to make it score closer. But how far away are the Aggies, do you think?
I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, I expected Clemson to win that game, and it wasn't a blowout, but if you watched it, it never really felt in question.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just Clemson just kind of had the upper hand throughout the entire game.
And
I really thought Kellen Mond, we talked all week that he had a monster game a year ago against those guys. We threw for over 400 yards, four touchdowns, and yet this time just never able necessarily get things in sync. Now, before we poo-poo on Kellen Mond and Jimbo, you got to remember they went to Death Valley and went up against, in my mind, the top defensive coordinator in the sport, Brent Venables, who had an entire 8 months to be frustrated by their performance at Kyle Field a year ago and to try to put together a plan of mixing up man and zone and trying to confuse Texas A&M. And I think he did a heck of a job. So we'll see where they go from here. Obviously, in the SEC West, it's a grind. But I still think there's a lot of potential for this A&M team, especially on offense.
Yeah, it really is. I expected more out of Mond in that game, too. But going to be interesting. So, say, hey, thanks for spending some time with us. And hope you come back to Austin. And hope there are a lot of more big games like y'all did on Saturday.
Yeah, so. We hope so, too. We had a great visit. And like I said, still a long way for Texas to kind of pick themselves up and get heading in the right direction. I still think that game in Dallas is still obviously going to dictate a lot of things for both those teams as far as the playoffs is concerned.
Exactly. Kirk, appreciate it. You have a great week. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
All right.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Good talking to you.
You too. Bye. Bye.
Riveting conversation with Kirk Herbstreit of ESPN College Game Day. One of the good guys in the business, Duck. And he seems like he's still high on the horns.
Well, he is a good guy. And, you know, the second time we've had him on our podcast, he's been nice enough to come aboard with us two yokels. And, you know, Texas was one of his CFP picks. He picked him to win the Big 12. He picked him to ultimately lose to Alabama in the CFP semifinals. So, you know, he thought they were knocking on the door, and he's still high on their chances. Love Sam Ehlinger. Does think they're going to have to shore up their secondary like everybody does. So, he was very impressed with the atmosphere, with Texas, with Ehlinger, with Joe Burrow and LSU and that new offensive look that LSU provides. And so it's amazing, isn't it, Cedric, to see the change in college football? It's such a tidal wave of change to the point where Nick Saban has incorporated the spread in his offense. LSU is passing downfield on a 3rd and 17 with the lead from their own 39-yard line. So it was just a wonderful game, and it was good to have Kirk Herbstreit talk about it.
And he has Texas still in the CFP, losing to Alabama.
Well, I don't know about still. That was his August prediction, but he still thinks they can get there.
Wow.
But they've got a pretty, they've got to run the table to have any hopes of the CFP, and even then you've got the top heavy SEC. You got Clemson, you got Notre Dame as an independent, so it's much, very much a long shot for them. But I don't know, any, you know, put a bow on the LSU game, any thing that you'd like to bring up besides 3rd and 17?
Absolutely.
What you got?
I really think that Keontae Ingram needs a hug, and I didn't like his body language, Duck. And you know what? I actually asked Tom Herman about that, about where Keontae's head is. I asked him that on Monday. Check out what Tom said. Tom, Keontae is kind of an introspective, cerebral type running back, and he studies himself and studies the game. He'd be the first to admit that he left some plays on the field. How do you keep him up? Because his body language didn't look too good.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's talk, education. I mean, there's no magic pill. There's no, quote that I'm going to give him that's going to, you know, rectify anything. He knows he, one, needs to respond to adversity better in game. And then two, you know, I told the whole team yesterday, and it applies certainly to Keyonte, is you've only failed once you stop learning from your mistakes and improving. You know, that's when you're a failure. Making mistakes is part of life, and it's part of growing. It's part of, you know, you got to use mistakes as feedback and get criticism from the experts, which are your coaches, and then apply that feedback and criticism and go improve. But so the only way you can fail is if you don't improve from and learn from your mistakes. And I fully believe that Keyonte, you know, plans on doing that.
I like the accountability part. I like the fact that he told him that they need him and that they still love him. But you know what? You're a sophomore. You're supposed to be the bell cow of this running game. Number one, you got to catch that ball. I don't care. I don't care if you're playing in Alaska in sub 30 degree weather. You got to catch that ball, because you catch that ball and you just never know how a game's gonna happen. How much more the crowd would have gotten involved. Texas needed to get out to a good start, and he was part of the reason that they didn't. I really think, Duck, that Roshan Johnson should get some more carries this weekend against Rice. I really liked what I saw from him.
I'm not so sure he shouldn't be the starter, Sid.
Wow, you'd start him?
Yeah, but to me, starting is almost incidental. You know, it's kind of sends a message.
I mean,
team.
They start John Burt, so come on.
And does it even matter if they say they get 40 carries between them, 20 each? Does it matter who gets the first five carries or not? I just think it sends a message to your team that nobody's safe, okay? Sam's safe. We know Sam's safe. But, you know, if you have a bad game, you've had a bad week of practice, to me, there's nothing wrong with moving the other guy ahead, because it's all about competition. Coaches have no more favorite word than he's a competitor. They call Devin Duvernay the biggest competitor on this whole team.
They sure do.
You know, and Colin Johnson was talking about, yeah, we played some trash basketball, and my team beat, and Devin Duvernay didn't, and he was mad the whole practice. So to me, it's about accountability. It's about competition. And it doesn't mean you don't love Keyonte Ingram. That doesn't mean you're going to not need Keyonte Ingram. It's just you're rewarding Roshan Johnson for what he did in attacking the ball and playing so damn hard.
And you know what? Roshan Johnson hasn't even played this position. He was a running quarterback in high school.
Right.
But playing big-time Division I football, running back against the LSU Tigers from the SEC.
And looking good.
Breaking tackles, running angry. I just loved what I saw out of him. And I don't think it was a flash in the pan. I think he's a football player who's athletic enough to adapt to different positions. It doesn't really matter to me who starts, but I think that division of labor should be closer to 50-50 this week against Rice. I'm sure Keyonte's going to bounce back and have a big game against the Rice Owls, but that doesn't mean that those scars from LSU aren't going away. He knows that he had a chance to make an impact in a marquee game that the whole nation was watching, and he didn't get it done.
Yeah, I think they're both going to have big games, to be honest with you. I just think, you know, Rice is not going to present the challenge, if you will, that LSU's defense did. And, you know, it's an 0-2 Rice team. And I just think they both have a good game. It won't surprise me at all if they both go over 100 yards. Will it surprise you?
No, not at all. Not at all. And they're going to make sure and try to force feed Keyonte. They got to get his head right.
They want
get
to
his
be
head
confident.
Back in the right space going into that conference opener. Is it Oklahoma State, Duck? The conference
yes.
opener.
Yeah.
So going into that game, they want his mind right for you know, just for the important games. The Longhorns should win this game by 2 or 3 touchdowns minimum, and Rice will be scrappy. They held Army to 14 points, and Army got after Michigan. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of effort we see from the Owls. We know the Mob's going to be in full effect for sure.
Well, and I'm sure Rice will be scrappy. You know, Mike Bloomgren came over from Stanford to the Rice program.
Hey, did he used to coach Brett Favre with the Packers, Bloomgren?
Wrong grin. Holmgren.
Oh, who was that, sir?
Okay, that was Holmgren.
Okay,
Holmgren.
Okay.
You were close. I guess you were half right. But you know, one thing I was interested in, I was looking at some of the Rice notes this week, and they've got like 10 transfers that are playing, and 7 of them are grad transfers, including 3 of their starting offensive linemen. So to have 7 grad transfers and another 3 junior college transfers, you know, and all of them start, 1 on offense and 2 on defense. And this is a Rice team that'll play sound football. Yeah, they didn't fare as well against Wake Forest. You know, Wake Forest came out in third quarter, scored like 2 touchdowns on 5 plays in 58 seconds. And that made the score a moot point. That game was over. But they play a fullback. They'll play a couple tight ends. So, you know, they're going to probably try to be Army. Quite frankly, they'll try to shorten the game, keep the clock running, and try to limit their mistakes.
Well, I love that Texas gets a chance to get some payback. I mean, not that Rice did anything wrong, but the Horns need a dub going into the conference season, especially coming as close as they did. Real quick, Duck, what's up with your Aggies going to Clemson? Jared Hocker says there's going to be an upset. And there they were with 3 points with 10 seconds to go before they got the backdoor cover. There's some people that are interested in that to lose 24-10 to Clemson. I thought the Aggies would play better than they did.
Yeah, I did too. I really thought they'd cover, and they did, like, what, in the last 20 seconds or so?
Ten seconds.
Yeah, they added on that cheap touchdown to make the score a little bit more respectable. But they weren't competitive in that game. Kellen Mond didn't look very good, and obviously now Corbin, their talented tailback, is out for the year with a serious hamstring issue, and Spiller, freshman's coming in, going to have to carry the load for
them.
All
right, Isaiah, your chance.
Yeah, exactly. So, and they got Lamar on Saturday, so that'll be an easy gimme. But yeah, I put them 22nd in my poll.
Oh, they came after you, didn't they?
Yeah, they weren't happy with me, but you know, the way I look at it, it's like, well, you beat Texas State, and you really weren't competitive in that game against Clemson. I give A&M a lot of credit for scheduling Clemson in the first point, but you've got to be competitive. You know, that game was almost a blowout from the second quarter on, and it just seemed like they were never able to put up much of a threat to Clemson. And go ahead.
And didn't Herbstreit say he was kind of surprised?
Yeah, he did. He thought Kellerman would do better too. And you know, you got to do it on a big stage. And you know, that's what Sam did. That's what Joe Burrow did. And
man, Joe Burrow, stud.
He's going to be an NFL quarterback.
You know, Doug, to get back to that game, it's something that I mentioned to you at lunch yesterday and today. Sam Cosmi made himself some money this weekend at tackle. He got after Calavion Chaisson. That was a full-out brawl from start to finish. Those guys were going at it. It was beautiful to watch. Sam Cosmi has a mean streak. He's tough, and he's a redshirt sophomore. He's still a little undersized. I think they're going to put 10 pounds on him, and he's going to be an early-round draft pick at the next level.
It was 6'7", 300.
Mm-hmm.
He don't know he has to put too many pounds on, but
yeah, get him up to about 310, 315.
He does look good, and like you said, that was a battle and very intriguing. And each of those players won their share of battles, so that's such a key spot. So, I mean, he's as good a left tackle as they've had there in a while, so his star is really rising.
You know what, Doug, before we go to the NFL, bit of sad news to report, T-Boone Pickens, Oklahoma. Longtime Oklahoma booster passed away. And what age was he, Duck? 90,
he was 91.
91 years old.
Right.
Fun to be around. Feisty, funny, smart, opinionated, didn't hold his tongue, and friend of On Second Thought.
Yeah, we did have him on our podcast, and a big fan of his. And he was both compassionate and passionate, and Oklahoma State was the beneficiary of that. I mean, gave just untold millions to that school, and that football and basketball program would not be at the level that they've been at. And I know the basketball team has fallen off, but, you know, they've had like, I don't know, something like 10 or 11 10-win seasons in their football history, and nine of them have come from Mike Gundy. And he's part of the reason because, as you know, it's a facilities war and a facilities arms race, and he kept them, you know, afoot and on equal footing, you know, with a lot of the other big powers there. And he just had a huge impact. And like I said, he's somebody whose company we really enjoyed. If we'd go to Stillwater cover game, he'd invite us to his luxury box.
And he
was outspoken. He was candid. He doesn't mind speaking his mind. He talked about how he and Mike Gundy hadn't really gotten along and weren't really talking at the time.
Became
a huge issue that week, a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, we tried to have him on last year, the Oklahoma State week, and he said, I think I've stirred it up enough.
I've said enough.
I think I'll pass this week. But
so smart.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and sports, Duck, is not only about the games. It's about the personalities.
Absolutely.
It's about the personalities. These athletic directors and boosters, you had a good relationship with Joe Jamel, and I still to this day love my exchanges with the Lost Dots. I saw him in the press box on Saturday, and he goes, "I still read you every day. Thanks to Loss, you're still full of crap." That's from him. And to me, that's love. I will take that all day long and twice on Sundays because it's the kind of, you know, in our travels, we do develop relationships with these very important people. And a lot of them are fun to be around. T-Boone was one of them.
Well, he's up there with Phil Knight, and I don't know of two benefactors that had bigger roles and impacts in their athletic programs.
Jeannie Craig, to a smaller degree at San Diego's University of San Diego, she gives them a lot of money. But as far as the big power schools are concerned, you can't overemphasize how important Phil Knight has been at Oregon and T-Boone has been in Stillwater.
And you know what's funny is, like you say, well, you got to be careful with that because you don't want the donors to be running the ship, you know, and running the show. And, I guess that cuts both ways a little bit because you want to take their money. And would Oregon be where it is without Phil Knight? And,
no.
And would Oklahoma State be where it is without T-Boone Pickens?
Absolutely not.
You know, and so I don't know if you take the bad with the good, but I don't know if any Oklahoma State fans thought there was bad, but I didn't. I thought the world of him, had ultimate mad respect for him. And, you know, he was an energy and oil magnate and a giant in that industry as well. And just sad to see him go. He will be missed.
On Second Thought.
Well, Duck, the Houston Texans and the Dallas Cowboys opened up the season. The Cowboys were electric against the New York football Giants. And in the best game of the weekend, the Houston Texans figured out a way to wrest victory from the jaws of which is it? They figured out a way to wrest defeat from the jaws of victory, basically, because they had that game won. Let's start with the Cowboys. 35-17 win over the New York Giants. I really think Dak Prescott showed the world that he can be a franchise quarterback and that he is deserving of a big fat deal from our guy Jerry Jones.
Yeah, what'd you say they look like on Sunday, the Cowboys?
They look like a Super Bowl contender.
Well, I guess. Did you not read our take?
No one reads you, sir. Okay. No one reads
you.
Well,
then maybe you should, because I had the Cowboys in the Super Bowl losing to the Kansas City Chiefs, and you know, that score a minute offensive machine that is the Chiefs and Pat Mahomes. And the Cowboys just bludgeoned the Giants. Yeah, the Giants aren't really good, and they aren't a playoff contending team this year. But the Cowboys have all the pieces. And Dak Prescott, I got to take off my hat to him. He continues to impress.
You're not wearing a hat.
Yeah, well, if I did, I would take it off.
Okay.
And, I mean, Amari Cooper looked good. You know, they're working Zeke back in. Defense looking good. Jason Witten's got a little bit left there.
Very little, but that's okay. Keep going.
I think Michael Gallup is going to have his breakout year, and Randall Cobb's going to help. So where's the weakness on this Cowboys?
Sideline, Jason Garrett. That's a weakness.
Now, why do you have to go hate
Jason
there?
Garrett is an okay coach, Duck, but he's not in the top half. I put him maybe at 15 or 16.
Yeah, I think that's where he is, but maybe he'll be coach of the year this year.
But I'm going to tell you, him bringing in Kellen Moore, the reviews on Kellen Moore were all positive. Great mix of run and pass. Mixed Ezekiel Elliott in there perfectly in his first game back. Got Michael Gallup going. Michael Gallup's going to be the breakout player on that offense this year.
No question.
And then he did a good job managing the game with Dak. And so I have to give Jason Garrett a little bit of credit for that.
Oh, I bet.
Because he is the boss. So I'm not hating on Jason Garrett, but I've never considered him a great coach. But you know what? If they go to special places, like Kirk Ray Bowles said that they were going, then I will move Jason Garrett up into that upper echelon, maybe into that top 10 if they make it to a Super Bowl.
Hey, they play at Washington this week. The following week, they host Miami Dolphins.
Oh, WW.
Which is a really, really good college Division III team.
Wow. Hating on my Fins.
They will
hating on
bludgeon your Fins, and then they'll be 3-0, and maybe in the power ratings might be the number one team in the NFL, or second to the Chiefs.
Or the Patriots, but, maybe third. The Patriots are there.
Oh, how about those Patriots?
Well, how about whatever?
Well, they look good. And then, flipping to the Texans, I'll be at their game against Jacksonville and Nick Foles Sunday. Oh, wait.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
Poor Nick. His I dad hate doesn't that like for you. Nick. Broken clavicle, his first game, and now Nick.
I hate that. I hate it for Nick.
He's one of the nicest guys.
What a sweet kid. Yep. He is a sweet kid who just can't seem to get a break. No. You know, and at this point, it's not about the money that he's made. All of those guys get paid. But he just can't play more than two or three games without getting hurt. And I was really looking forward to seeing him go up against that Houston defense.
Yeah, I did too.
They went up against another Westlake alum Monday night, and I thought they had the game won.
So did they.
Deshaun Watson, friend of the podcast, what a stud horse
he is. He is. I want him on my fantasy player team. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe that spill he had by the goal line. That was a little bit scary.
Our friend Mark Rosner thought he should have just run out of bounds. I'm like, no, when you see a touchdown there at the goal line, football takes over, instinct takes over, and you stop being a quarterback for that instance, and you become a football player first.
But you're wrong. You know,
I'm not wrong.
Oh, do you want to be a football player, or do you want to be him to be a starting quarterback for 16 games?
You know what, Duck? What happens there is when Deshaun Watson scrambles, goes to his left, and he sees the 5-yard line, he can run out of bounds.
But he didn't.
Or he goes for broke.
He didn't.
And you know how much cred he got in that locker room?
He's already got the cred.
He got even more cred, sir.
And more cred in
that locker room, particularly from the defensive guys. They see that. And let's talk about something, because, you know, here's where you mess up, because you have selective amnesia, Bowles.
How's that? You forget
stuff. A couple of years ago, sir, we're at the Black Sheep Lodge watching a Thursday night football game, and my fantasy league quarterback, Matt Ryan, was inside the 10, and he scrambled, and he the goal line was right there, and he slid at the 3-yard line. What did you say? Oh, my God. What a punk.
What a wuss.
He's soft. You can't have it both ways,
but that was
sir, different.
When Watson was trying to score, there were about, 15 guys there on defense trying to tackle him.
15. You're only allowed 11.
Well, they looked like 15.
Mm-hmm, there were two.
And then they dumped him on his head and his shoulder and his back.
And he got hurt.
And you said, oh, great, his gopher broke. You don't want him broke. He's been broke before.
No,
and
but
he's already got that cred in the locker room.
Yeah, but now they know for sure that this guy will do whatever is possible.
And I think
if you're the
53rd
guy on that roster, you can't loaf now. If you're J.J. Watt, you can't loaf, because Deshaun Watson is showing you that he is one of the preeminent best young quarterbacks in the league, and he's tough as nails.
That's got nothing to do with it.
I love it.
Doesn't Watson, all those other players, shouldn't they be selling out anyway? Do they need the quarterback showing that he's tough?
Why do you think people love Brett Favre so much?
Because he was a swashbuckler.
Because his arm would be literally hanging off the socket, and he'd still play.
Yeah.
He never missed.
Yeah.
Brett Favre was pound for pound the toughest quarterback to ever play in the league. And there's a reason. Those guys get hurt, and he got crushed.
He did.
He played the Minnesota Vikings twice a year.
Yeah, but usually
he played
on,
the Chicago
usually
Bears
on
twice
sacks,
a year.
So he wasn't a running quarterback,
yeah, but,
as you
but
know.
But he would stand in there and hang tough, knowing he had to wait that split second for the receiver to come open, and he would get crushed.
Okay, all right. Well, as usual, you're wrong. And let me ask you what you learned from the Texans.
I didn't learn much. I learned that I'm still not a fan of Bill O'Brien as the head coach.
Yeah, well, we agree on that.
I don't know why you're playing for a Hail Mary and the Saints have 6 seconds and a timeout in their pocket. Yeah. You knew Drew Brees was going to try to get him 4 or 5 yards closer, and he did exactly that.
You know, it's funny. The Texans lost. Texas Longhorns lost. You can almost trace the Texas loss to that 3rd and 17. Okay, we've talked about that ad infinitum. And then the Texans lose basically on the field goal after that 6 yard gain. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, if O'Brien had really been coaching him up and told his defenders don't touch the guy, because remember, as soon as the receiver caught that short gain, he got touched, plays dead, they call timeout. And then they kick the field goal. But if you don't touch him, the play's not dead, is it?
I don't think it is. So that is maybe the smartest thing you've ever said.
Well, that doesn't say much. But.
Oh, my God. If they just leave him there, because he didn't slide.
No.
He went head first. If they had just not touched him.
The clock runs out.
And let the clock run out.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Why?
No. Saints let a timeout. And they called it as soon.
No. I know
that. The whistle's got to blow,
fam. The play's not dead.
The whistle's got a blow. So.
And it's not dead as soon as he goes down.
Man.
And only had like 2 seconds left.
You're playing chess. That's great.
To me, that's on O'Brien. If he's smart enough to realize that, if they're down in the field, just corral them. But we got to have that clock run out. So, anyway, who knows?
I wonder if can an offensive player run and take a knee?
Well, quarterback will.
I know quarterbacks and can.
I don't know as far as receivers. I don't know. You know what?
Can a receiver slide?
If he just laid there and he wasn't sliding, he just kind of caught it and fell down, I don't know how long it would take before they blow the whistle. You know, because he can get up and run if he's not touched. But I wonder, they're not going to let him sit there 10 seconds, obviously.
Yeah, because the fact that he threw it to him in the field of play and didn't throw an out route.
Yeah. It's dangerous
because, yeah, I wonder if, did anyone write about that?
I don't know. I haven't seen that.
That's an excellent point, Kirk. I don't know.
Okay, let me write that down. You agree with me.
Oh, my God.
Excellent point, said Golden.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so Texas Rice in Houston Saturday. You're going to Dallas, correct?
I'll go to Dallas for the SMU North Texas game?
No, Texas State. They beat
SMU
North
Texas.
Why are you going up there?
If I'm going to go, I need to know who's playing.
Yeah, that would help.
SMU, Texas State. Shane Bouchelle, the new golden boy on campus at SMU. I'm going to go and write a column on old Shane. Yeah. And maybe sprinkle in some Jake Spavital, because he is a friend of the podcast.
He is. Doug. Ponies are 2-0. Shane Bouchelle's getting it done. So, I'll be interested to see see your account of that and how he's looked. So, it's going to be a fun weekend.
On Second Thought.
That will do it for episode 150 of On Second Thought. We got to thank Kirk Herbstreit for joining us. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.